Hello, listeners. It's Maria and Ammo here once again.
Your favorite thanatological twosome.
Your macabre MCs.
Your gurus of grief.
Your pathfinders and passing over.
Nice. Your duo of death.
Ooh, that sounds badass. I like that one. How about your gravely guides?
Your mentors. Mentors in mortality.
Ooh, good one. Are you ready for a trip down memory lane? Well, not our memories, but they're someone's memories from a long time ago.
What are you talking about?
History, I mean. It's time to bring back our historical perspectives of death for a new episode this season.
Ah, that's right.
And since this is clearly becoming a reoccurring topic, we've got a catchier title for him. Ready? On 3, 2, 1. A history of death. Oh my God, that worked so much better in practice, we promise. So bad.
To refresh your memory, we dive into historical cultures and explore their views on death, afterlife, and even things like funeral rites. I think last time we explored Tibetan sky burials and the Torajan people of Indonesia.
Yep. And before that, in season one, we looked at some of the classics, you know, ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, the Aztecs.
The OGs. And whenever we educate you all, our listeners, about stuff like this, we both learn a lot and the episode does really well. You let us know on social media as well about lots of other interesting cultures that we can talk about.
Yep, and that's literally the point of all this. We talk death to create a better lease on life.
Boom, indeed.
So, what are we diving into today? Well, we've been planning to cover these perspectives for a while. Ammo, you want to go first?
Sure. So today, I'm exploring Haitian voodoo. That's not voodoo, but I'll explain why that is later. Beliefs around death and life, funeral rites, and also about a lot of media representations that have fooled you into thinking it's this weird, evil thing when it's not.
Oh, yes. I love squashing misconceptions. Macabre mythbusters.
Damn right. In cases like this, that's super important to do, but I'll get to all of that in a second. This intro feels like the opening of a Top Gear episode, though, don't you think?
Is this the part of the episode where you do an impression?
Tonight on Top Gear, I punch a producer in the face, James says the word cheese, and Hammond drives the fastest hearse in the world.
Shaking my head. On my side...
You get that reference, by the way?
I don't understand 90% of the things you say.
I don't know why I asked. Yeah, that's true.
On my side, I'll be venturing to Valhalla and tackling death and the afterlife within Norse mythology.
Vikings. Hell yeah. Like hell with one L. That was a Norse pun, guys.
Well done. Well done. I don't think people realize how complex and intricate Norse mythology really is. It's actually on par with Greek and Roman stuff.
What, you mean it's not just about shirtless Chris Hemsworth and quippy one-liners?
Well, I'm kind of glad that Marvel movies brought it more into the limelight, but man, they kind of ruined a ton of it, didn't they?
Well, let's hope that you and I do these two cultures justice then.
Agreed. So gather your worldly possessions and join me and the Valkyries for part one, Death and the Afterlife in Norse Mythology.
Well, I'm low-key excited for this. Get it? Anyone? Oh, okay.
So here we are. Rest your axe, grab your mead, and before the Shield Maiden regales you with the tales of old, let me ask, how familiar are you with Norse mythos?
Not much, but I know the basics.
So basically everything that you've learned is from Marvel?
Not quite. I'd say most of what I know about Norse mythology comes from being like a general history nerd and also dealing with men who claim they're real life Vikings. It's like, no, Keith, you're not a Viking. You're a 30-year-old accountant. Relax.
Don't forget their love of IPA and crypto.
Yep, Allfather Odin loves his Dogecoin. Don't forget. Oh, and I'd say that I also learned quite a lot about Norse mythology and culture from playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
For those that don't know, one of the latest games in the Assassin's Creed franchise is set during the Viking era. Shout out to Ubisoft for such educational content.
Yep. Shout out to Ubisoft for watering down the Assassin's Creed series. Although I like Valhalla, purely because it's set in England, so I'm probably a little biased. It is funny, though, when you look at the scope of the series and these hugely famous ancient locations, you have Jerusalem in Assassin's Creed 1, then there's Rome, ancient Egypt, Greece, Constantinople, Paris, and then in Valhalla, you're, like, raiding Tamworth. Like, come on. I don't know.
I actually have a very similar bias, though. I loved Assassin's Creed Odyssey because it was set in Greece, and I loved the more explorative RPG elements of the game.
By RPG elements, do you mean that you lived out your fantasy as a spear-wielding Spartan woman?
To be fair, I'm only missing the spear right now. But the game did allow me to make my ancestors proud. What's cooler than that?
That's a good point. So, credit where credit is due. I learned a fair amount from history in general, from the Assassin's Creed series, probably more than I learned in school.
I mean, that's fair. All that proves is that kids aren't disinterested in learning. We just need to teach them in better ways.
Preach.
But let's not get too carried away with video game rants, because we have an entire episode on death and grief in video games coming up later this season.
Good point. I'll save the rants for that episode.
So I'm glad you're at least a little bit familiar then with Norse mythology. I'm about to throw a ton more at you in a second, but as we go through, if anything relevant comes to mind, please jump in.
A man interrupting a woman to mansplain stuff? Never.
No, go ahead. We'll keep a tally, like a mansplaining meter.
Remember, guys, we're being ironic, right? So this isn't the kind of behavior you want to emulate. Like, don't see this and think, like, I want to do that. Be better, guys. Don't be Keith, the 30-year-old Viking accountant.
But also don't think of Ammo as a mentor or anything like that.
That's fair.
Role model. Mm-hmm. To be fair. So Norse mythology, a lot of what we know is what we can find on Norse markings or stuff that's kind of been spread around. As you know, the Vikings historically were very raidy.
I was terrified about what you were going to end that sentence with.
Yeah, same, honestly.
Oh, here's one for the mansplainometer. It's funny that we call them Vikings now because they use the word Viking as a verb.
Oh. Okay, go on.
So, and the word Vikinga would be a noun for the person going on these adventures or raids. So the verb would be Viking, like we're going a Viking, meaning to travel or participate in these adventures. And we got it the wrong way around and stuck with it.
Ah, easy mistake to make when there is very little focus on recording history in any written way. So from what I was able to gather, a lot of traditions and stories were passed down orally from generation to generation, you know?
So they were basically like, we'll set some of this permanently in stone, and the rest we'll basically play telephone with. It's a bold choice.
Yep, but it's also been argued that any type of writings that were created about the Norse pantheon were actually destroyed because, well, history.
Yeah, and I guess competition or like conflicts with other religions was a factor as well.
Yeah, exactly. A little fun fact for you, Norse mythology is considered to be the last pagan system to have fallen to Christianity, but because of how potent and ingrained it was among the people at the time, Christian scholars actually worked to preserve some of the stories.
The Christian church working to preserve something they don't agree with? I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's been argued that the idea behind this is to either argue against their validity for future as a way to maintain it as historical.
That's a bold strategy. Hey, look at this really cool other religion. Oh, that's cool. Can we have that? No, you're going to stay in this boring one where you're going to go to hell if you don't spend your Sundays in this church that's really cold.
Right? I mean, it could have been curiosity. Or it's for a totally different reason that no one knows. Maybe everyone was just making it up. That's history for you.
Remember, kids, everything is made up and nothing matters.
You little ray of sunshine. So as a result of Christian scribes, we actually have two main sources of our Norse mythology. These are the Poetic Edda and the Prose Edda, both from the 13th century. There's been a number of modern day scholars that have tried to reconstruct pre-Christian Norse beliefs using textual and archaeological evidence, such as grave markings, but because of the lack of written record, we only really have the tales captured by Christian missionaries in these texts.
So our idea of Norse culture is basically a mishmash of what we found from their grave markings and what other cultures have written about them, basically. That sounds like a perfect recipe for misinterpreting stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Again, anytime either myself or Ammo cover another culture on the show, we try to be as respectful as we can and also be as accurate as possible when talking about these topics. But some cultures and histories are just harder to find out about than others. That's the problem with trying to understand cultures through the limited lens that history provides. But we do our best, right, Ammo?
Yeah, that's a good point. So for any cultural or historical practice we explore, I mean, we're trying to understand these things ourselves as well. And we really try to talk about them in a way that's fair and respectful. But if we do get something wrong, you're welcome to pull us up on it. Just creating a better life about understanding death thing works two ways. It's a discussion. So yeah, let us know.
And on that note, it's important to keep in mind that some elements of these stories are portrayed through the lens of missionaries and how they perceive the stories in religion, not how the actual people did. A lot of organized religions have a habit of seeing believers of other faiths as either uncivilized or as heathens or whatever other word or acronym they want to use.
Yeah, true. But so from what we have gathered, what have you learned about the Norse afterlife and the Viking concept of death?
So in the afterlife, there are several realms, each with their own characteristics and residents. The two most commonly known places are Helheim, also known as Hel, and Valhalla. You can think of Valhalla as a massive hall located in Asgard, which is the realm of the gods. This realm is reserved for the bravest warriors who died in battle. For anyone who doesn't know, Valhalla is basically the party of all parties, right, Ammo?
Yeah, it's like Comic-Con, but for people who can actually use swords. And what makes Norse mythology so interesting is that even the afterlife sort of has an end to it, because the halls of Valhalla are where those who died in battle drink with the gods and prepare for Ragnarok. And Ragnarok is like this giant final battle. It's the end of days in Norse afterlife.
Yeah, I actually got here that a bunch of key figures, including the gods Odin and Loki, are actually foretold to die during Ragnarok.
Yeah, Odin gets eaten by Loki's secret son, who's basically a giant wolf.
Okay, wait. I thought you said you didn't know that much about Norse mythology. Hello?
I mean, I guess I know more than we thought.
Then why don't you take this one? And I would have taken voodoo. I would have had to do all this research.
Yeah, I mean, that now would have made more sense. But I thought you'd cover this stuff anyway, right?
Well, right now, it looks like we're in the middle of the Ammo Somal show for the next 40 minutes. At this rate, listeners, I'll catch you at the end for a sign-off.
Okay, well, let's swap then.
It's too late to swap now, buddy.
Well, I mean, you did say for me to jump in when I can add something.
Yeah, but I didn't mean it to jump all the way into the deep end.
Okay, it's all yours. My bad.
Oh my gosh. Next time you're secretly a savant at some obscure subject, please tell me in advance. I know about the flags, but didn't know about this.
Okay, sorry.
You are done, buddy. So, yes, those who died honorable deaths, like those who die in battle, end up in Valhalla, vibing with the gods, and readying up for the final battle called Ragnarok. Now, when these warriors died on Earth, known as Midgard in Norse mythology, they're escorted to Valhalla by some boss-ass babes called Valkyries. You can think of them as angels of death. They decide who live and die in battle, and they gather the souls to bring back with them to Valhalla. Think of Valhalla as also kind of like the VIP nightclub, and the Valkyries are security, and they've got a list of people who are going to make it in or get rejected at the door.
I've never wanted a metaphor to be more real than that one.
I'd be there every weekend. Now, you've probably heard the term Valkyrie before. In popular media, we've seen them portrayed as women. They're usually depicted as either having wings or riding on a flying wolf or horse. But that's not always the case. I've got notes here related to some depictions of them as crows flying over the battlefield during times of war. Odin loves his crows, mm-hmm. And stuff like that. Regardless of which form they take, they're meant to serve Odin, and they even fight alongside the fallen warriors and the gods when Ragnarok happens too.
Oh, so the nightclub security's also coming to the after party. Nice.
Yep, they know how to party. And because Ragnarok doesn't take place on Midgard, also known as Earth, it's not like a single event. It's more like a series of things, a bunch of cross-realm battles. Odin becomes wolf food, apparently. Thor and some other A-list names are said to die during Ragnarok as they fight demons and giants. Along with these deaths come natural disasters at some point where the world is submerged entirely in water. Don't know how the word world comes into play here when the fight is in Valhalla, but who am I to question these stories? I'm guessing they mean the other realms?
It's a good point, actually. Can floods travel interdimensionally?
Right? That must be a nightmare for insurance.
Sorry, sir. If you look at your policy, page 128, section B18, you'll see that flood damage originating from outside the realm isn't covered by insurance.
Sorry, we don't insure against acts of gods.
Nice. Okay, so everything ends with everything being underwater, right?
Well, here's the thing. To quote Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen, nothing ever ends, Ammo. Nothing ever ends.
Oh?
Well, according to what we know, after all these events take place, the world will rise again, cleansed and fertile, and the surviving and returning gods will meet, and the world will be repopulated.
Will the Valkyries be there for the repopulating bit? Asking for a friend.
No, it's not that kind of VIP nightclub. The world is supposed to be repopulated by two human survivors, actually.
That sounds kind of familiar. So did Christianity rip off Norse mythology?
To be fair, I think every religion ripped off every religion in some way throughout all of history.
You know what? When you put it like that, that's fair.
Now, that's Valhalla, where some of those who died honorably, like dying in battle, go.
Some?
Well, remember, there's a bunch of other realms, too.
Norse mythology be like, but wait, there's more.
There's much more. But sometimes they actually cater to the same type of souls. Let's take a look at another realm called Folkvangr. This is a realm ruled by the goddess Freyja. I hope I'm pronouncing those words correctly. Sorry if I'm not, guys. She's considered the goddess of love, beauty, sex, fertility, war, gold, and something called cedar, which is magic for seeing and influencing the future.
She's got that Freyja vision. Also, she's the goddess of love, beauty, sex, fertility. That's all in the same wheelhouse. That makes sense. But then she's also got war, gold, and cedar too.
Women are multitaskers, what can I say? Typical goddess energy, if you ask me. Interestingly enough, she actually gets priority to choose who from the battlefield enters her realm of Folkvangr, which is more like a meadow with a sprawling palace. It's a much more chill vibe compared to Valhalla, which seems to be basically like the bro-y house party nightclub, where just everybody gets drunk and starts to wrestle each other.
It's interesting that Freyja gets first pick on souls, and then Odin is the one who gets second dibs.
Benefits of being Odin's lover, I guess?
I know which realm you'd prefer.
You think I'd prefer Freyja's?
Well, look, as a man, even I'm saying that Valhalla sounds like they're trying a bit too hard, if you catch my drift.
Well, when you put it like that, I guess. But I would like to visit Club Valhalla on weekends, if that was allowed.
That's actually a good point. Do you know if souls are able to travel between these realms? Like, obviously provided you're on the Valkyrie's guest list and you get there before 11.
From everything that I read, the answer is no. It seems like where you go in the afterlife is kind of just where you stay and hang out. And I'd imagine that is particularly true for those who didn't die a quote-unquote honorable death, basically dying in battle. Would it be kind of bizarre if you died in battle fighting for freedom and then randomly see Timmy from insurance, the salesperson, in the same place as you in the afterlife?
That's very true, actually. Especially if he's going to deny my multi-realm flooding insurance claim. But that does beg the question, where do the others go?
Well, as we've learned, Asgard, the home of the gods, is known as one of the nine worlds in Norse mythology. Depending on which text you read, there are typically about 12 realms found here. Some texts mention less, while some mention more. Some of these realms are most commonly known are Midgard, again, that's Earth, Vanaheim, Valhalla, Gladsheim, Helheim, Alfheim, and Nilfheim. I really hope I'm pronouncing all of those right.
Yeah, and obviously that's a lot of ground to cover, so I'm guessing we're going to skip a few right now, but we can leave some links in the show notes so you can look these over in more detail if you want.
Oh yes, absolutely. So, of these realms, Helheim is considered the place for the dead, for those who didn't die in battle. Now, remember how I said we only basically have two main accounts that speak to Norse mythology?
Mm-hmm.
And all other texts or information we have are very scattered or very different?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is where it gets to become a little bit of a problem trying to research true Norse mythology and what the actual beliefs were. Basically, when I was looking to better understand Helheim, the only consistency I read was that this is the place of the dead who didn't die in battle.
Yeah, that's kind of broad, because by that definition, all of the other realms are just extra storage, which isn't correct.
Exactly. One source I looked into said that Helheim has two areas. One where it's cold and damp and miserable, that's filled with serpents.
That sounds a lot like England.
That's not even where the bad guys go, though, because what I was looking at, it mentioned that area was for folks who just died. They just died. The place for perceived evil people was the other side, where they were tortured by a giant.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where my knowledge of Norse stuff ends, when it starts getting all complicated with like all these realms. And honestly, it sounds kind of unfair as well. Most people don't get to choose how they die.
But when we looked at another source, it said that this is meant to be a place of basically, you can kind of think, mundane living. And another said that this is where those who died from old age or sickness go. There seems to be a lot of mistranslations or variations on most of the realms of Norse afterlife. And we've only got so much time to cover all of these interpretations.
Yeah, and to be honest, that doesn't sound like the most efficient way of sorting souls, Mr. Odin.
Well, I think it comes down to the fact the Norse afterlife doesn't work as a reward or punishment for how someone acted in life. The only reason we assume it does is because A, a lot of other religions do, and B, the fact that hell, one L, and hell, two L's, basically come from the same old Germanic word.
Huh, okay.
But I'm glad you mentioned the word soul, because the Norse concept of soul slash the self is actually quite fascinating and might help us understand everything a little bit better.
Oh, what is it?
Well, the Norse concept of the self includes four aspects. These four different aspects make up a whole new person of sorts. It low-key kind of reminds me of a coaching exercise I once did, identifying all the allies and saboteurs in one's mind. It was pretty cool.
It's kind of refreshing to hear of a soul as four separate squabbling parts, to be honest. That's cool. Tell us more.
So the four aspects of the soul include the Hummer, the Huger, the Fuligja, and the Hummingja. Apologies again if I am mispronouncing these words.
Who are you offending? There's no Vikings left.
I don't know, people. So the Hummer is that of the physical appearance of someone. So basically how you looked in life. But in the afterlife, this can be manipulated, such as shape-shifting into another being. The next element is the Huger. This is the person's core personality, which is said to continue on after death. Then there's the Fuligja, which can be thought of as a familiar spirit to the dead person and reflects their Huger. So for example, a person who is considered shy or docile could be represented as a deer, or someone who is a warrior and outspoken could be seen as a wolf. Finally, the Hummingja, this is seen as the success that the person experienced in life, also considered the quality or protective spirit someone has in them. This was also considered to be passed down through families, for better or worse.
I mean, as much as it makes the concept of good and bad more complicated in this situation, this holistic approach does shed some light on things.
Now, I bring this up because another cool thing is that Norse apparently believed in some kind of reincarnation.
Right, but not in the traditional sense, right? Because if you're splitting a soul into four different parts, some of these parts you said move on to the afterlife, and then other parts would pass down, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's super fascinating. It was believed that a person's huger would pass down into a newborn relative, while the hamingja continued on in the family at large. Kind of think
like diabetes.
Kind of think of like family curses or family good luck, I guess. And then the phaligja is said to stop existing once the person died.
Okay, so now all the realms and all of that starting to make a bit more sense.
Yeah, I also feel like sometimes in our quest as people to find similarities between cultures and languages, while it comes from a place of wanting to relate or understand, we can actually kind of hinder our own learning about them and valuing the differences that they bring.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Good point.
Now, these intricacies with the Norse idea of the soul is one of the reasons we can't cover everything in this discussion. For example, we won't cover funeral rites because it's just as tied to and as intricate as the afterlife is.
That makes sense. I mean, we covered the main points and we learned some pretty interesting stuff about Norse death and afterlife. We'll also leave a bunch of interesting resources in the show notes as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, Ammo, over to you, Haitian voodoo.
All right, let's get to it. So, first things first.
Of course.
Before we dive in, like I said, if I'm covering a topic, I'm going to do it respectfully and I'm going to give it justice. So let's get our terminology straight. The idea of voodoo, spelled V-O-O-D-O-O, as manufactured in pop culture and films, is not rooted in any reality. So the voodoo dolls, the black magic, Dr. Facilier from Disney's The Princess and the Frog, all of that stuff, those are like horrible stereotypes. So let's kick that out of the door right away. The Haitian religion of voodoo, spelled V-O-D-O-U, is not primarily based on magic or witchcraft. And the majority of people in the faith, called voodooism, will never have seen or heard of a voodoo doll. And there are also a lot of parallels with Catholicism, which I'll get to in a second.
Ooh, okay.
So Haitian voodoo, or voodoo in general, as I mentioned, is one of the most misunderstood and misrepresented religions in the world. What it actually is, it's seen as more of a spiritual system and a way of life that encompasses things like philosophy, medicine, justice, agriculture, cosmology, and even arts, right? So much like your example in Norse mythology, some parts will just work very differently to the kind of religions and belief systems that you and I are used to talking about.
Right. That's not exactly a connection I was expecting to make today, Norse mythology and Haitian voodoo being as holistic as they seem to be.
Right. But now let's address the elephant in the room. So voodoo is an African diaspora religion. And like a lot of African diaspora religions, we can trace it back to folk religions in Africa. But we have to acknowledge that Haitian voodoo was mostly born out of the struggles of the transatlantic slave trade. So when Spanish and French colonists settled in Haiti in the 16th century and beyond, they enslaved people and transported many of these enslaved people from Central and West Africa to work on their plantations. Haiti's slave code required all enslaved people to be baptized as Christians, specifically Catholics. Now, since the enslaved peoples couldn't practice their folk religions openly, they borrowed elements from Catholicism to blend into their faith and disguise it to protect their worship. Thus, Haitian voodoo was born. Side note, Christianity had made its way to Africa before this, but I digress.
I am loving all the back information that you're providing. All the historical context, very important.
So as you can see, the misconceptions and negative stereotypes around Haitian voodoo are rooted in centuries of anti-Black racism and colonialism. And basically, media portrayals are just trying to say, oh, Black people are scary, which is horrendous, right? Christian purity also plays a factor, you know, with it painting voodoo as demonic and evil and all of that stuff. Then more recently, you have a lot of media portrayals. And that's just examples of like nasty exoticism. And voodoo isn't the only victim of this, because you've seen in old movies and even recent ones, people who come from faraway lands portrayed as primitive or savage before the white saviors come in to save the day, right? This has happened to other cultures too. Orientalism is one example. And you also have portrayals of indigenous North Americans in Western movies, right?
Ugh, this is the worst.
Yeah. And the frustrating thing is that even in Haiti, where it was recently granted designation as an official language alongside Catholicism, it still faces prejudice and hostility today. That's how ingrained these misconceptions are, even in Haiti. But despite all of this, the misrepresentations, the hundreds of years of oppression in Haiti and in the global media, the religions persevered. And even today, it's a strong and vibrant part of the island's culture.
Oh, I love to hear it. Up yours, colonialists.
Yeah, up your colons, colonialists. Is a colonist an arse doctor? You can keep that in if you want.
Oh my God. Yeah. So, since you mentioned the correct term of vodou, does vodou mean anything specific?
Yeah. So, the word vodou means spirit or deity or even God in a language known as Fon. This language dates back to the African kingdom of Dahomey in the 1600s in what is now modern-day Benin. And that's just the name, right? You have to remember that a lot of the beliefs and terms in Haitian vodou derive from its older cousin, African Vodun. So we could be talking thousands of years of history here.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So while beliefs vary from community to community, especially in the Haitian North-South divide, there's one supreme god called Bon Dieu, from the French word for the good god, much like Catholicism, right? But Haitian vodou mostly involves serving a pantheon of spirits or saints known as Loa, L-W-A that's spelled. And serving these spirits is called servi-loa. The loa fall under different categories or nations or families as they're known. There's a lot, but the main families are the Rada, the Petro, and the Gede. Today we're going to look at the Gede nation of Loa. That's the nation of death, fertility, and regeneration.
Gotcha. That sounds right up my alley. I'm just thinking of in Greek Orthodoxy, sometimes we pray to certain saints for a specific reason. For example, we have Aios Fanurios. And this saint is the person that you pray to whenever you lose something and you ask to bring it back to you. So Haitian vodou is similar to that, just with groups of spirits or lua. Who would you say are the key figures in the Gede nation, the death branch, quote unquote, of the lua?
The most famous one is the Baron Samedi, known for appearing in a James Bond film somehow. It was a weird era. The Baron Samedi is the Lord of the Cemetery, and he's the Lord of the Dead. And the other spirits, or Loa, in the Gede family are basically his assistants. But he's commonly depicted as a skeletal man who's dressed in a top hat and a formal coat with the fancy tails on the back, even has a cane with a skull on it, which is cool. Every time he ventures out of the Kingdom of the Dead, he has to wear dark-colored glasses to protect his eyes from the light. And Baron Samedi spends most of his time in the invisible realm of the vodou spirits. He's notorious for his outrageous behavior, swearing, and making filthy jokes to the other Loa.
Sounds very familiar, Emma. So you mentioned serving the Loa earlier. What do the practices look like with particular respect to death and grief?
Yeah, so serving the Loa, or Sevi Loa, can depend from person to person. And even the Loa in question. But it's not that the worshippers are servants to the Loa, as the name would suggest. It's about reciprocity and restoring balance and energy between yourself and the Loa in question. To maintain this relationship or receive their guidance, there's a bunch of different practices. And like I said, it depends on the Loa. This can usually range from prayers to song to ornaments, clothing, even gestures like dance. Individual Loa have favorite foods, favorite colors, favorite dances, and music that you can offer them in ceremonies on special days.
Oh, that's so interesting. I love that. It feels really kind of intimate, building this relationship with each Loa and understanding their rituals.
Totally. And this reciprocal nature is really different to a lot of Western religions, which is why it's kind of hard to grasp for some people. So the Gedde family of Loire and Baron Samedi. The celebration of Baron Samedi and the Gedde family takes place in November on All Souls Day. Another example of it blending with Catholicism there. Other Loire within the Gedde nation include Baron Semitier, Baron Lacroix, and Baron Criminel. Now, since Baron Samedi is the Lord of the Dead and also notorious for his appetite for spice and rum, on his day, you typically dress in black and purple, you offer him spices and rum, and you take part in various dances and rituals.
You dress in all black and love spiced rum. This whole time, you've been serving the Gedde.
Apparently so. And what's interesting about these ceremonies is that each dance and the rhythm of the dance depends on the Loire. So for the like warrior nation of Loire, the dance is quite militaristic.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and this is something you don't see in a lot of Western religions because, well...
You know who has no rhythm.
You said it.
Sorry to keep relating this to Greek stuff, but from what you've said, the Baron seems to be a mix of ancient Greek gods, Hades, who's the god of the dead, and Thanatos. Like Thanatos, he guides the souls of the dead into the afterlife. On the other hand, like Hades, he rules over the underworld, ensuring that the dead remain dead.
Sort of, yeah. I personally wouldn't try too hard to find similarities, purely because the role of the Loire and the relationship to mortals they have is pretty unique, right?
Oh yeah, totally.
So with all of that essential reading done, let's get to the funeral rites. So much like other parts of Haitian culture, funeral rites incorporate elements of Vodou and Catholic religions. Also, funerals are more of a community affair, and they take place over a few days. Interestingly, when I looked into this, I found specific instructions not to wear red.
Oh, that's interesting. I know in some cultures, red is actually associated with luck and celebration.
Right, but for Haitians, red is the color of an assassin or criminal, so it could be seen as inappropriate or worse. Immediate family members usually wear black, while some guests, such as children, wear white. So clothing color carries huge symbolism here. Other than that, dark colors are pretty standard for funerals, and it's best to cover like shoulders and wear, you know, long clothing as a way to show respect. This is common in a lot of religious funerals around the world.
Yeah, that tracks. Yeah.
And actually, I found an example of a hymn used in Catholicism and Vodou ceremonies. It goes, three paters, which means father. Oh, three Hail Marys we believe in. The God who gave us life, but there is Jinin. In Jinin, oh, there are Loire. Oh, there are Loire. Oh, the family is in Jinin. Let's put our heads together so we can save the country.
Beautiful. I love when you go into your little poetic tangents.
Me too. So it's believed that when somebody dies, their soul enters the spirit world or the unseen world immediately after the death. The 9 days after the death, however, is a really important time because it's believed that although the soul is traveling to the spirit realm, it still lingers close to the body.
So what happens during the 9 days then?
So it's reserved as a time for mourning and of celebration. The festivities take place, so you'll have some drumming, some dancing. A priest or priestess also performs a ritual to release the soul on the 9th day completely, completely away from the proximity of the body and into the spirit realm. Following this, the rites seem pretty standard alongside other, you know, traditions, preparing the body, the community coming together to offer support. Then the body's taken to the ceremony for the funeral. The cemetery itself is seen as a sacred place, with the Gedde Loire seen as the protectors of that space, as mentioned. Loved ones there can respectfully communicate with them there.
Oh, I love that. The idea of communicating with the dead and the spirits always gives me, like, goosebumps.
Right, but I think that's because of the fear of the unknown, right? Here's what I think. With Vodou, obviously death is still something people fear. But the vast nature of the Gedde nation of Loire means that the concept of death is less taboo and less invisible for them, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's healthier than how we deal with it.
Yeah. And on that note, they actually come back to the funeral process a while later. it's common in Haiti to hold a second ceremony several months or even a year after the burial in what's called a rite of reclamation ritual. That's where a voodoo priest or priestess calls a soul into a govi or a clay jar, allowing the deceased person to be at peace.
Oh, okay.
I like that idea because it reaffirms the person's presence in the community after they're gone. It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, totally. It also makes it seem as if their presence is still felt. And I feel like it would help the grieving process too. As we've said time and time again, grief is not linear. And our approach to just sticking people in the ground and being like, okay, now you got to get over it, doesn't really work.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of beliefs in Vodou highlight the importance of remembrance and community, the soul, and also general respect for the dead. There is a huge emphasis on honoring their ancestors too. Haitians observe Ancestry Day annually on January the 2nd. So it's kind of beautiful to see how communities can come together and find comfort in knowing their loved ones are at peace.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
Right? So any Voodooizans listening, I really hope I did justice to your wonderful faith and culture. As you can tell, I deep dived into this and it was honestly amazing to learn about. It's made me ponder a lot of my personal beliefs around community grief. And it's also made me challenge my own stereotypes about Vodou.
Yes. And that in a nutshell is what the show is all about, folks.
Absolutely. What a wonderful trip this was. Haitians, Vodou practitioners, let me know how I did. I'm eager to chat. We actually wanted to get a guest on for this to help us explore this better, but that was kind of a tough one to organize.
For sure. So? We've both learned a lot today. How about we test the listeners and ourselves with a quick spin of the Wheel of Misfortune?
And ironically, I'm finding it the best way to learn. Gamification, baby.
All right. You want to do the honors?
My pleasure.
All right.
It's landed on Variety, so we will get a random assortment of question formats about what we've learned today. Listeners, you're free to play along with us.
Okay, so, Ammo, what four elements are part of the human soul in Norse mythology?
The hard part about this isn't remembering them, it's pronouncing them.
Oh, I am well aware, and I am looking forward to hearing you say these words.
Okay, let me think. So there were a couple of H's in there.
Yeah, I'll give you that. There were.
Hugo and Hama are the two I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Haminja?
Close. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Haminga?
You know what? I'll give it to you. It's...
No, let's take that from the top. I got them confused.
Oh, okay.
Haminja?
Mm-hmm.
Hamingja.
You know what? I'll give it to you. It's Hamingja.
Nice.
Yep, just one more.
Fly something.
Fly?
Is that not right?
It's...
You have to relearn how to pronounce these words. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. It's Faligja.
Faligja. Sounds it's like a Pokemon.
Faligja.
I tried.
Phalange. I don't know what that is. I watched Seinfeld. Friends? It was in an episode and it was Seinfeld. Oh.
Okay,
you're up.
Okay, so in Vodou, the nation or family of Loa spirits that are responsible for death and fertility are called?
I don't want to mess this word up.
I believe in you.
Is it good day?
Yep.
Yay!
Fantastic.
Oh my god. Your turn. Yay. Okay, so in Norse mythology, Valhalla and blank are two places where souls go upon death.
Okay, so obviously I know Valhalla. The other one is Hell, isn't it? Helheim.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct.
Yes. Okay, back to me in Vodou. What month does the ceremony to celebrate Baron Samedi and the Gede Loa take place? And what's one thing you can do to take part?
Okay, two-parter. Okay, I got this. January was the funeral ceremony, so it's not that. I'm thinking October, November. Let's do Scorpio season. I'm going to go with November. And one way to take part is by acting like you, wearing black and purple.
You're on fire today. Well done.
Yay! Okay, so here's a good fill in the blank about Norse mythology. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The blank decide who live and die on the battlefield and get taken to blank or blank once they die.
Okay, so I remember this one because I didn't actually know they were the ones who decided this. It's Valkyries. So the Valkyries decide who live and die on the battlefield and who gets taken to Valhalla and Helheim.
Mostly right. Valkyries, correct. Valhalla, also correct. But it's Folkvanger, not Helheim.
Sorry, Odin. My bad.
We've got time for one more question. Hit me.
Okay, this one's perfect to end things on. What does the word Vodou mean, and what language is it derived from?
Ooh, I know it means spirit or a deity. That I remember.
Okay, but now for the hard part, the language.
Jeez, I don't think I remember that one.
Fon. The language is Fon, the language of the African kingdom of Dahomey, which is in present-day Benin.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Look at you dispersing knowledge. I'm proud of you, even if Odin isn't.
You know what? I'd rather take it from you than Odin. Valhalla seems like a bit of a sausage fest anyways.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So that about wraps up today's episode. I had a lot of fun and I learned a ton of cool stuff. That's what we're all about.
Same. Listeners, what were your thoughts on today's episode?
Are there any other cultures or religions that you want us to explore in future episodes?
Be sure to send us a message on social and we'll see what we can do.
That's right. You can also give us a follow on social, like, favorite, subscribe, and all of those things.
That's Philotimolife, Philotimolife.
Till next episode.
It's a bye from Maria and Ammo.